Hi, good evening. This is your host, Deborah Herman, and you are listening to Soul Odyssey Radio, where each week we talk about topics relating to your soul's growth and the esoteric and sometimes the paranormal, which I consider the normal, but it depends on your perspective. And sometimes I am privileged to have guests to bring you perspectives from their very interesting lives. And this evening we have the medium's medium. Although he says that he doesn't like to toot his own horn, so I'll toot his horn for him. We have Brian Hurst. He lives in California, but I think you'll be able to tell from his charming accent that he originates in Great Britain. And he is here to share his perspective and his experience with mediumship. He is also known to have been the discoverer and the teacher of James von Prague, who is someone that is pretty well known, and I know that you will be very thrilled to hear from Brian Hurst. How are you, Brian?
Oh, hello, Deborah, and hello, listeners. It's a great pleasure to be here, and I've done a number of television and radio things in the past, and this I'm speaking from my home in Reseda in the San Fernando Valley in California. And I haven't actually met Deborah in the flesh, but we had a lovely conversation the other day about mediumship, and she's been reading my autobiography, Heaven Can Help.
I am really enjoying it. And what I love especially, and what I am hoping to share with our listeners, is you really describe your earlier experiences with discovering mediumship, your own gifts, and some of the things that I think people don't experience, particularly in this country, and that is some of the origins of spiritualism. Perhaps you can open the show with talking a little bit about some of your first experiences as a young man when you discovered people with this gift. I think you went to your first seance with one of your aunts, or was it a cousin?
Yes, my aunt Doreen. No, I called her Dory. Actually, it had started earlier without me being aware of it. When I was a young kid, I poked a screwdriver into a power point, which in England is 240 volts. And I had the electricity run through my body, and it threw me back on the carpet. I never told my mother for some reason about this, because I think I was embarrassed and afraid I might get into trouble for poking a screwdriver. I was trying to get a piece of cotton or something out of the PowerPoint. And after that, I began to have dreams or feelings of floating out of my body at night and seeing faces and hearing voices in the air, which got quite scary. And so I asked my mother for a nightlight, and I wanted to have candles or little lamps burning. You know, for a couple of years, I think my mother agreed to this, and she was quite understanding. But it really all started, I think, with an electric shock.
Oh, my goodness. If I were your mother, I would have, oh, my goodness. But they say sometimes these things are instigated by a shock or it may have been a coincidental type of thing. Maybe actually it's one of those sixth sense twists where you actually pass to the other side. Are you speaking to us from which side, this side or the other side?
Yes, there we are. I'm from the other side of the country, aren't I? So I think you're having a joke with me here.
I was just making a little joke.
You were making, I could
but,
see that.
Very little. But your Aunt Dory, in your book, you describe her as such a wonderful character.
Oh, she was lovely. She was lovely. And you know, she was very privileged because her older brother, Frank Hurst, he had died in a motorcycle accident at the age of 20. And she found this wonderful medium, Mrs. Anne Copley of Hemmingford, Huntingdonshire, as it was then. And Mrs. Copley was a voice medium, a trumpet medium. I mean, she'd go into a trance. And, of course, when my aunt told me about having conversations with her dead brother and other people in the family, I thought she was a nice lady but a little bit cracked. I didn't quite sort of believe her, you know. But then she got me into this seance with Mrs. Copley. And Anne Copley herself was kind of nervous about her own mediumship. She always insisted on sitting in a little chair behind some curtains, and she would be often asleep. You could hear her snoring, actually, and we would sing some hymns. We could sing some hymns, and these luminous megaphones were on the floor with a bowl of water. They said the bowl of water helped with the energy, and it was in pitch darkness, which made me suspicious at first. But then these luminous trumpets or megaphones began moving about in the air, and they flew about at fantastic speed and tapped on the ceiling of the little hut. We sat in a hut in their garden, which had been made into a little seance room. And after several people spoke, my dead uncle came through, and the trumpet hovered in front of me in the dark, and I could see it clearly with the luminous bands around it. And my uncle told me about something that I had experienced in London. He said, "You mustn't go to college without something in your stomach." He said, "Every day last week you went to school without any breakfast." And it was the only time that I'd done that.
I read that in your book, and I think what's interesting about Anne Copley that you describe is that she said that she would be afraid to see the things that she knew you were going to see.
Yes, absolutely. That's what she said. She preferred to be right out, and she didn't want to know anything about it. Well, people would tell her afterwards, but, I mean, she didn't want to actually hear the voices or see the trumpets moving, and she was kind of frightened of the whole thing, but she was a wonderful medium.
You have a wonderful description in that part of your book about where you're explaining how this actually works, the independent voice phenomenon. I think you were explaining about how this is what's called physical mediumship, which is not as common for people to see today. You've often described yourself as a mental medium, or are you also a physical medium?
Well, I'm a mental medium, but when I was in my early 20s, I did have brief experiences of being a physical medium, but I chose not to go that route because I thought it might be detrimental to my health, or it might just be dangerous dealing with people because I got slightly injured at a seance, and I did describe that.
Which situation was that? I'm not sure if I've gotten pretty far in your book, and I only have had it for a short period of time, and it's just amazing. But what happened to you?
Well, I had a home circle in North London with some friends of mine, and we came and they sat regularly. And then a young lady that I'd known at college, she wanted to bring a couple of friends of hers to the circle. And without realizing that I might be in some danger, I allowed these three girls to come in, the extra people. And, of course, that night we started getting the spinning of the trumpet. The trumpet was beginning to spin, and I was taken into a trance. Obviously, ectoplasm was coming from my body. And then one of the girls got very nervous and screamed out she wanted to get out of the room. It scared her. And so at that moment, apparently, I came back into consciousness and felt this horrible, horrible feeling of this power returning to my body. It was like almost like reverse vomiting, if you can see what I'm saying. Instead of something coming out of your body, something is coming back into your body. It was a strange sensation. And I was quite ill for several days afterwards, and I decided I didn't want to be a physical medium. It was too dangerous. In fact, quite a few of the physical mediums were injured by foolish members of the public who took flashlights in, because this stuff which emerges from the medium's body is called ectoplasm, given the name by Professor Charles Richet of Paris, R-I-C-H-E-T, in the 1920s, and he was experimenting with mediums in Paris, and of course he found this strange substance was real, and of course it's what was photographed earlier in the 1870s by the famous English chemist Sir William Crookes, C-R-O-O-K-E-S, who wasn't a crook, of course. He was a famous scientist who developed the early form of the cathode ray tube, which led to our television later on. But he and his wife and Dr. Gully of the Royal College of Surgeons in London, they found a young girl named Florence Cook, who was a wonderful physical materialization medium. And they invited her to the house. And there, Florence would go into a deep trance and appear sometimes to become smaller in the chair. Her body would physically shrink. They could see that under the gaslight. And then there would stand beside her, it would build up in a kind of silver mist, a silvery gray mist, a beautiful young woman who said her name was Katie King. She said her name on Earth had been Annie Morgan, and she had been the daughter of a Caribbean pirate. And she hadn't always been a good girl, and so she was told if she wanted to get redemption, she could come back to Earth and work with this scientist in proving survival beyond physical death. And she would fully materialize, and at one point, Dr. Gully asked her to take off the white ectoplasmic robe that she wore so he could physically examine her. And he found her to have a beautifully made female body with everything there. She was solid, warm, and physical. He took her pulse. Her pulse rate was different from the pulse rate of the medium. He went to the medium in trance, and very carefully and tenderly, he took Florence Cook's pulse, which was apparently much faster than Katie King's. Katie King was taller than the medium. Katie King had different hair color and different features. And, of course, they were able to take pictures of the first photographs of these full materialized forms dressed in these long, flowing white robes. And, of course, it was later that it was given the name of ectoplasm by Professor Richet of Paris. And, of course, he did a lot of research. He found, for example, in the Paris lab that if he sat the medium on a weighing machine and tied the medium up so the medium could not move around in the dark, as there were frauds, and he was aware of possibility of fraud, then he could test the medium carefully to see what would happen. They had a luminous table in the center of the lab, and he found that when the table started to be levitated, the medium he'd sat on a chair that was a weighing machine. And he found that the weight of the table, if it was 10 pounds, would be transferred onto the weight of the medium, who, although was not in contact with the table, when they took photographs using infrared, they found that there was a long psychic cable coming from the belly button area from the solar plexus of the medium going out into the room underneath the table, levitating the table, and the weight of the table was transferred down the ectoplasmic rod to the medium's body. Similarly, when spiritual materializations occurred, they found the medium would lose a great deal of weight. We had a marvelous materialization medium in England named Helen Duncan. Mrs. Duncan was a Scottish woman who died in the 1950s when the police burst in on one of her physical phenomena seances. And, of course, the poor lady, the ectoplasm was out of her body. And when they turned on the light and opened up the room, the materializations dissolved instantly and the ectoplasm flew back to Mrs. Duncan so quickly that she hemorrhaged. She was taken to hospital and she died soon afterwards. Another medium named Jack Webber died in 1940. He was a Welsh coal miner, a famous physical medium, and he died shortly after some seance room interruptions. This is probably why, when people do have physical mediumship, they tend not to want to share it with the outside public. Because there are all the people...
It sounds terribly dangerous.
Yes, it's dangerous. It can be dangerous. And there are people with mischievous agendas who would come and deliberately want to disrupt something like that because they have... maybe they fear it. Maybe their religious belief system is against it, or they just don't understand it. Because it's like developing a photograph, you see. The ectoplasm usually develops best in a darkened room. But they can also produce it quite clearly under a pink light. And a pink light does not appear to interfere. It's something to do with the vibrational frequencies of the spectrum. I don't understand it totally, but there are some very good descriptions by various scientists in psychic research about the conditions that are necessary or that will be helpful to get results in a seance room. First of all, love and harmony. Love and harmony are very important.
Well,
sorry, I
know
went on a bit long. Did you want to ask me something else?
Oh, goodness, no, I of course. But that was a wonderful explanation because I know that what I'm learning about you and your work and reading your autobiography is that you operate from a base of love and harmony and that your work has been really for the purpose of drawing to people's attention the existence of life beyond this life.
Yes, that's correct, Deborah. That's correct, Deborah. I have never charged high fees for my services. People say, oh, you're ridiculously cheap. Why don't you raise your fees? People keep saying to me, why don't you put your fees up? I said, look, not everybody has a lot of money. Some people who may need it, may not be able to afford to pay a lot of money. So I've never charged high fees. And I think in that way, I've probably seen a great many more people and given them personal messages than some of the mediums perhaps who've had the big meetings. When you go to a big meeting, you know.
You're working, you're working with the guidance of the universe and the guidance of God and your guides.
Yes.
And so if you have a message for someone, that's like you're also connected to, I'm sure, the other dimensional planes. And in the other dimensional planes, the energy of money is irrelevant.
Yes,
it's
thank God you don't need money when you kick the bucket. When you kick the bucket, you go over there, you can look young again, you can be rejuvenated, you can be the way you want to be. But for God's sake, don't commit suicide, because you may not be totally able to join your loved ones. You may be on a lower level, and you may have to come back to Earth and live another life a little sooner if you take your own life than if you had waited until the normal time of departure from the physical body. So suicide is not a good idea.
It's not, and I just to totally confirm, I had a guest last week or a couple of weeks ago, Mark Macy, and he's a wonderful person, and I highly recommend
Mark is good,
his. Yeah, I'll send you a copy of his book, and he I recently read his book Conversations Beyond the Light, and totally in keeping with what you're saying, he received messages through EVP, electronic voice phenomenon, from ethereal beings who explained the different dimensional planes, and they all say the same thing. It's the fact that you can't escape your spiritual path, so what you're doing is you're prolonging it. You can't get away from what it is that you need to experience.
Yes, that's quite right. Yes, that's quite true. Of course, I have contacted suicides. They're not burning in hellfire, as the Catholic Church would have you believe. None of that nonsense. In fact, I think the biggest enemy to spiritual progress has been religious dogma. I think religious dogma has caused so much pain and war and unhappiness in the world. I'm sorry, I haven't got much time for organized religion. It may help some people. There are some people who need to be told what to believe, who need to feel comfortable with music and all the rituals of some of the churches or chapels or whatever it may be. And I respect that. I'm not trying to be mean about that. But I personally don't find it helpful to me. I haven't needed to go to church or any of those things, although I have, in a sense, a church in my own heart, which to me is more immediate and direct.
Well, I think when you are someone with the gifts of mediumship, first of all, we are automatically out of the mainstream.
And we definitely are. Yes.
You know, I mean, it's a given. And I think that it goes without saying that if you're feeling the connectedness of that divine inner light, you can't accept the narrow divisions of various organized religions because they're man-made.
Yes, they are. You're absolutely right. Yes, that's true. That's very true, Deborah. I've tried to educate people for many years about, I mean, people that come to the small groups at my home. I'm partially retired, so I only sit for one group weekly. And I was seeing, a few years ago, I was seeing 20 people a week, and now I just see 10 or sometimes less a week, depending upon the time of the year. And we've got some extraordinary things. The other week I had a whole lot of Russian ladies come here, and one Hungarian lady, and we got Russian words which I didn't even know, and Russian names that were recognized. It was really interesting.
Well, you're humble and amazing. But I know that the things that you bring through are very real, and I'm such a strong believer. I know about the other dimensions. I experience this connection, and so it amazes me that I'm feeling the urgency for someone like you to be able to share what you know and to help people get over this fear of death. To understand.
Yes, well, of course, I was very friendly with the wonderful voice medium, Leslie Flint of London. I knew Leslie for 25 years, and I sat with him many times. Highly tested medium. scientist from the British Society for Psychic Research called Leslie there, and they tied him to a chair. They made him hold colored liquid in his mouth. They put sticky tape over his lips. They put a microphone against his throat. And in the darkened room, they then observed him through night vision goggles or infrared equipment, such as used by the U.S. Army, Navy, and Air Force in night surveillance. And they were able to see this ectoplasm coming out of Leslie Flint's left ear, rising up in the air 3 feet above his left shoulder, and producing what they called an ectoplasmic voice box, a complete replication of the human larynx. And they were able to photograph that and also to interview all these different people that spoke through that floating voice box. Now, I mean, there were two wonderful researchers named George Woods and Betty Green who went to London for 15 years with a tape recorder, and they interviewed hundreds of dead people. And they tape recorded all the interviews, and they put them on, now they're on the internet. And if you go into leslieflint.com, LeslieFlint.com, you can there hear, if you have a DSL connection or wireless connection, you can hear wonderful talks by people like Frederick Chopin, and I believe Charlotte Bronte may be there, and quite a number of people that spoke, as not only celebrities, but ordinary people who were asked by George Woods and Betty Green how they died, and who gave detailed descriptions of their passing over and their life on the other side. Beautiful, beautiful descriptions. Especially, there's one I do like. It's a Swedish woman named Annie Nanji. She went to Bombay, and she married an Indian doctor, Dr. Nanji, N-A-N-J-I, and they had two children, Peter Nanji and a little girl. Well, unfortunately, they lost both their children very tragically. And Annie said, look, darling, let us go back to Stockholm, to my country, and you can work in a medical health facility there. So they returned to her native country of Sweden. And shortly afterwards, Annie developed cancer, and she died. And Dr. Nanji was devastated to lose not only two lovely children, but his dear wife. He heard about Leslie Flint in London, who could produce these marvelous voices of dead people in the air, not from his own throat, but actually independent in the air. And he flew to London, and there he had a number of wonderful seances with him, and he received the voice of his dead wife. And he said, it wasn't somebody impersonating my wife, it was my wife speaking to me. And on those that Leslie Flint website, you can hear her say, oh, Dada, sometimes I walk along the street with you, and I do you not feel me put my hand in yours? And I go into the laboratory, and I sometimes help you find the exact page. I wonder how long I've got to wait for you. You are so fit and healthy. I think you are going to live many years. I hope you won't. Which, of course, makes everyone laugh.
Now, that was amazing, and that's because you went to the Dramatics Arts School.
Yes, I was a graduate of the London Guildhall School of Music and Drama. And even there, I was doing horoscope readings and some psychic readings for some of the people that later became famous. One of them was John Noakes, who was the star of the Blue Peter series for children's television in England. And John's birthday was the day after mine. I remember doing his horoscope years ago when he was a student at college and telling him he could be quite successful in adventurous roles and dramatic roles. And, of course, he later became internationally known.
Well, Brian, You still have it.
I've just written Cinderella's Secret. I've just written a lovely version, which was kind of automatic writing, in a sense. And I've just published it on Amazon, Cinderella's Secret and Other Classical Poems. It's a full-length poem with a totally different version of Cinderella. The stepmother is a medium, and the stepmother falls into a trance. And while she's in a trance, a spirit materializes and tells Ella Beaumont, the young girl who's been, you know, bullied by these two ugly daughters of the stepmother, and the spirit tells her where to find the key to her mother's bedroom that had been locked up for many years. Her own mother had died in childbirth, you see, in the poem. Beautiful lines of poetry, beautiful verse, in a very rigid rhyme scheme invented by Edmund Spenser, the poet who wrote The Fairy Queen in honor of Queen Elizabeth I. And I wrote the poem. And it's already got 5 stars on Amazon, which is very nice. And I hope to introduce it. A friend of mine is a teacher. He's using Cinderella's Secret in his English classes when he starts next term in August in school.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm sure it'll be far more interesting than studying the Fairy Queen.
Oh, yes. The Fairy Queen is such old-fashioned English. It's hard to read, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I've got copies of it on my Kindle.
I remember from college.
Oh, I'm sure you do. And I've got a Kindle, you see. I have the Amazon Kindle reader, which I love. and I've got to some of the old poetry on there, as well as novels and science fiction and spiritualist works as well.
Now, I think it's very interesting that in your story, you talk about some of your first introductions to metaphysics, which I find to be very similar among people who are entering their spiritual path. You go to this amazing bookstore, and you meet Little Michael, right?
Oh, Little Michael. Oh, he was a character, Little Michael.
Right.
Little Michael, he was almost a dwarf. And yet he was an amazingly intellectual man. He's a little Russian Jew, and he was very a very kind man. He's very kind to me. And, you know, we became good friends, except that I couldn't quite accept his fear of spiritualism. He thought it was all dabbling in the dark, in dark cellars, and he was a little scared of the whole thing. He was more or less into theosophical stuff and anthroposophy and theosophy and all that kind of thing. You know, he was more along that line than he was spiritualism. But he did help me to some extent, and, you know, we did have some interesting experiences there.
Well, what's interesting, though, you describe that he was very in tune with the elemental and nature spirits.
Apparently so, because I saw that little gnome, that little, that was like a transparent jelly-looking figure that materialized near his left leg under the table, where it was gloomy, and I could see this little human shape there. It was very strange, and he said, "This is not hypnotism, Brian." He said, "This is not hypnotism. He's a little gnome. He just came to look in on us."
Well, I have to say that I didn't necessarily believe in the elementals until I took a photograph of one.
Did you really?
I was taking just a photograph at it, and I have it on my Facebook. A lot of people have seen it, and it's you cannot miss this little face that's a little tree spirit. And I said I never believed in it, so I got a real kick out of reading about it. And I also thought that it was interesting that you were seeing that even though this man, Little Michael, as you describe him, was very intellectual, that in some ways he wasn't really spiritually open, as you are a spiritually open person.
Yes, he wanted me not to go to seances. He wanted me to stop any idea of being a medium. He thought it would be harmful to me. So in that way, that's when we parted ways. You know, I just stopped going to visit him because I felt that he was so much anti-spiritualist, and I was involved with spiritualism so deeply as a young man and found it very fascinating and very satisfying. And I was getting these messages at Belgrave Square, which is the Spiritualist Association of Great Britain in London. I went there, and I got messages about all kinds of things and messages from people that I'd known and loved, which gave me great proof from mediums like William Redmond and Nora Blackwood and Kathleen St. George and some of the old-time style mediums there in London. They were just marvelous back in the 1950s.
Well, he was attracted from an intellectual standpoint, it appeared. He was attracted to occultism.
Yes, he was. Occult, that's right. And he published
which is very different.
Yes, it is, and he published a book by G.B. Gardner, who was a witch, who later established the Gardnerian style of witchcraft in England, where they, I don't know whether they danced naked in the moonlight, I don't know, but Gardnerian witchcraft, it was a subject for the Sunday tabloids, you know. It was the scandal papers that dealt with him later on, G.B. Gardner, and I know Michael published one of his books, I think.
And yet it's hard to believe, and I relate to this because one of my first teachers, so to speak, I didn't realize that there was a difference between a spiritual path where you're pursuing an awareness of your soul and of God and understanding the occult and some of these other areas. It really is a different perspective. And so some of the things that you were learning, he probably didn't understand.
Yes, he probably didn't. I think he was fearful of it. And yet, you know, he said his master, as he called him, was an artist in Chelsea who taught him some ceremonial magic. And he attended some ceremonial magic with this master who said that he could materialize things and produce windfalls and lucky chances for people in business and things like that. Of course, I got a bit wary because I'd read Marlowe's Dr. Faustus. You know, about the making of,
yeah, of
a bond with the devil in Marlowe's play, Christopher Marlowe's play. And I thought, I don't want anything to do with anything dark like that. No, thank you. And I stayed right away from it.
Exactly. Let's not manipulate reality in that way.
No,
because
no.
You'd be selling your soul.
Well, it's true. So, you can destroy yourself in the end, you see, if you do those kind of things. It should be the right motive. The right motive is so important, to have love in your heart and a willingness to be of service and compassion for people who suffer. Compassion. We have to learn love for others, service to others, and compassion and wisdom. And if we practice love, service, and compassion, we do automatically acquire wisdom. I'm so lucky. I've been taken care of by the spirit world. They've warned me about people and about events that would not be helpful to me. And I've tried my best to listen. Sometimes I didn't, and I came a cropper because of it, you know. But most of the time, I do listen to my voices and follow my intuition, and it keeps me fairly safe.
Well, I do know that you had an early experience with a seance or with table tapping where,
oh, yes.
Against your better judgment, you had,
yes,
some alcohol and your friends were drinking. And tell,
yes,
us
the college
what happened.
Friends, yes. The college friends were drinking, and there were two boys that were there. One was from my hometown, and the other one was Michael from the college. And there were several girls present. One of them, I think, was a very mediumistic girl. She was shivering afterwards. She was actually trembling and shivering afterwards. What happened? We sat with a table, around the table with this candle, and we were trying to see if we could conjure up the spirits. I was only about 19 or 20 at the time and didn't have much knowledge of the dangers or the possibilities of drawing in negative influences. And, of course, the candle suddenly blew out, and the two boys were thrown back from the table. And when we switched on the electric light, you know, they'd been forcibly, you know, pushed forcibly back, both of them on opposite sides of the table, whereas myself and the young ladies, we were still sitting around the table. Whereas they weren't. And then the next moment, the lights fused, the lights went out, and everybody in the house was complaining. And we began to say the Lord's Prayer, the Lord is my shepherd, and, you know, all the usual stuff. And and things became quiet. But when the light came on again, one of the young girls was absolutely trembling. And I think she was the medium, or she'd drawn to her certain influences. So, you know, you have to be careful. People who have parties and they get a bit drunk, they should never, ever get the Ouija board out. They should never, ever have a seance. The Ouija board could be used under the right conditions. When people say a prayer and they approach it as a sacred thing and they reproach it and ask for protection and say a prayer up before they do this, and they're not drunk and not inebriated, then, of course, there can be wonderful messages spelled out for certain people. They must approach the whole thing with sincerity and not with a, you know, joking, let's have fun kind of attitude.
Well, it's nothing to play with.
It isn't, no.
And I think people who do the kind of work that you do, I think that the universe finds ways to get the message to you through object lesson that, hey, this can be a blessing, or if handled incorrectly or you don't protect yourself or learn more about it, this,
yes,
could be very dangerous and harmful.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, Deborah. Yes, that cannot be emphasized enough. Fortunately, I had wonderful experiences with Leslie Flint. I sat with him many times, the voice medium, where the voices spoke in the air. And, of course, I got confirmation about my reincarnation from ancient France, from the French Revolutionary period. When I was about 18, I went to a meeting in London, and William Redmond told me, the famous William Redmond, he came to me and he said, there's a gentleman from the 18th century here, immaculately dressed. He said he knew you at the French court. I thought, baloney, I don't believe a word of it. I thought the medium was just making it up. Well, then a few years later, I sit with Leslie Flint of London, and who should come through but a Frenchman named André. And he said to me, he says, Monsieur, you will find this difficult to understand, but I have known you in a previous incarnation in Paris. I wish to be of help and service to you, Monsieur. You have been chosen by this world of spirit to do certain work in your world. I and other souls will come and make the path clear for you. And he made some predictions, all of which came true. And it was quite incredible. And then about three other mediums also gave me the same message that I had lived at the court of Marie Antoinette. My logical thinking to this is that probably in those days I was a servant. I was nobody important. I was just a servant. But I was serving people that were totally, you know, frivolous. They gambled. They had no idea of how the poor people of Paris were living and couldn't find any bread or corn. And, you know, and so in this life, I had to come back and be of service to the real people, the real folk, the real public, not the courtiers who had privileged existences and you know, were the parasites, I would think, at that time, somewhat, to some extent. Although I think Marie Antoinette was not a bad person. She was just naive. She had no idea of what was going on outside the court. She tried her best to do charitable things. And, you know, I think she was a kind person, but she was treated with abominable cruelty. And she lost her little boy, the little boy, Louis Joseph, her little son, died young of TB of the spine. Maybe he was spina bifida, I don't know. But there was so much intermarriage in the royal courts of Europe, you know, they carried the hemophiliac syndrome as well, where the male children were bleeders and didn't stop bleeding, the blood didn't clot. Why the Spanish royal family lost so many male children. I mean, Queen Victoria even passed on that gene to some of her offspring, I believe.
Huh. It's so fascinating that you were able to get confirmation of past lives. But what I also hear, which is a wonderful confirmation of one being on a spiritual path, is that even though you throughout your life have had proof of mediumship, you still question, and that's very healthy. You weren't automatically going to accept that you were this big, important person. I mean, you were looking at it in the context of your spiritual path and your lessons and your soul.
Yes, I think you're right, Deborah. You're right. And I think that, you know, I must have been with all these snooty courtiers and people that thought they were above everybody else. And I think, you know, I probably observed their lack of humility. And that's why, to me, humility is so important in this life. You know, to be humble, to be approachable, to be friendly, to treat other people as you would wish to be treated. That is so important. Do unto others as you would have done unto yourself. The words of wisdom run. For hate breeds hate, and everyone must reap the seeds they sowed beneath an early sun. So watch out when you do what you do as in your 20s. It may come back to kick you in the butt when you get to your 40s or 50s. In other words,
too bad we don't realize it until we're at our 40s.
No, we don't, do we? I mean, no. I think no one's perfect. None of us is perfect, and we're not expected to be perfect. At a seance I went to once with Jim Hutchings, I remember when my Auntie Mary came through, and it was her real voice speaking in the air, that I actually cried at the seance. And I thought, oh, my God, I've done so many stupid things. I've made so many mistakes. You know, I've got into situations with people where I should not have done those things, you know. And I had deep regrets. And suddenly, a very kind and lovely spirit voice from the air said to me, you know, the words were more or less, no one is perfect. You learn from your mistakes, and now you will be much stronger and wiser. In other words, the spirit voice gave me understanding, compassion, and kindness. They were not judgmental and harsh, as some people on Earth might be. You know, I think we on Earth are so much more judgmental than the spirit world.
Truly. I really believe that one of the biggest things that God and the universe, and I speak God in general,
yes,
want us to learn is not to be judgmental. And
yes,
not to
judge,
be judgmental,
not that you be not judged,
of ourselves.
Judge not that you be not judged. That's what the Bible says. I think that's true. And I welcome people. I have, in my seance room, we've had Russian Jews, we've had Iranian Muslims, we've had Hindus, Buddhists, atheists, agnostics, and Christians all sitting together, and everybody was nice to each other. And that's the way it should be.
We come in different clothing, and
yes,
that's
exactly
what it is.
Truth has no label. Truth has no label. It's only these priests and some of these pompous people who wear funny hats and funny costumes, and that was never meant to be. And those people, you see, they want to retain their power and their control over the masses. And, of course, years ago when people couldn't read or write, there was a large, high percentage of illiteracy. It was so much easier for the people involved with the church to take complete control and to terrify people with threats of hellfire and damnation, which doesn't exist at all, only in the imaginations of those who created it. There are levels of regret. There are lower astral levels, of course, which are dark and gloomy, where people appear to be unpleasant because they were unpleasant people on the earth. And we have been told that if you were rather homely and not very attractive here, but you were a good person, you can be more beautiful when you reach the other side. Similarly, if you had movie star looks, but you were a rotten person who dealt drugs and ruined everybody else's life and did horrible things to others, but you look like some, you know, Dorian Gray, can I put it like that, then, you know, you would lose whatever beauty you had when you went to the other side, and you'd really look depraved and awful. So, you know, it would show on the features and in the spiritual light around, or lack of spiritual light, around that particular entity. So you see, over there you cannot hide your true self from other people around you, and birds of a feather flock together, which is why Jesus said, in my Father's house are many mansions, many, many different levels of consciousness, many stratas of being. Leslie Flint had a seance in London, had the beautiful voice of Elizabeth Barrett Browning come through with her husband Robert Browning, and I have a tape recording of Elizabeth's lovely voice, and right at the end, and I played it to a born-again Christian who said, oh, these are all demons in disguise. I said, well, look, please listen to what Elizabeth Barrett Browning has to say. And to his credit, he did sit and listen. And towards the end of her talk about her relationship with her father and how she eloped with Robert Browning to Italy and they had their son, Panini Browning, and, you know, about her life and how she respected and loved her father even though he was a strict man. You know, they made the play The Barretts of Wimpole Street. Rudolf Bessier wrote the play in 1923, I think it was, The Barretts. They made a movie of it. Mr. Barrett was very harsh, and then Elizabeth eloped with Robert Browning to Italy. Anyway, that's the story. And right at the end of her talk, she says, this truly is the light of the Christ Spirit which comes to you. Go in this light and do the work of the Master Jesus. Peace and blessings be upon you. Farewell, my friends, she says. And when he heard that, he said, oh my God, I think some of the demons must be revolting against the devil. I said, oh, how can you be so stupid? How can you believe that? How can you believe that nonsense? You know, this is obviously a very sincere Christian woman speaking from a Christian perspective. And if you go on Leslie Flint's website, you'll also hear Jewish rabbis speaking. There are Jewish people coming through. And there's a lovely flower seller named Rose Hawkins, who sold flowers at Charing Cross Station before the First World War. And she's a very talkative lady, very chatty. And actually, when I sat with Leslie Flint in Hollywood, when he was here in Hollywood in the 1987, Rose Hawkins came and spoke to me. And she was such a friendly, pleasant lady. And, of course, I spoke also to a lady who said to me, my name is Florence Hurst, and I'm a member of your family, and I wish to come and speak to you. So I said, oh, well, that's very kind of you, Florence. What do you want to tell me? She said, I married my husband, John, in 1829, and my maiden name was Fletcher, and I was an actress in the theater. You didn't know you had an actress in your family, did you? And I said, well, no, my father's brother was a singer and dancer, and he worked with Benny Hill, the nightclub, you know, the comedian. My uncle and Benny Hill did nightclub work years ago in London, many years ago. Anyway, then she told me more. She said that she'd lived in various places and she was an entertainer. She said, I want to talk to you because you're interested in spiritualism, and so was I. So I said, well, where did you actually live, Florence? She said, in London and I various places. I moved around in Brighton. And I said, well, where did you pass over? Well, she said, I passed over at a place on the south coast called Eastbourne. And she said, I think it was sometime in the 1880s. Now, the seance we held with Leslie Flint was in 1987 when this remarkable lady came and spoke to me in the air, very clear. She kept saying, can you hear me? I'm trying to get through with this wretched voice box. Can you hear me? She kept saying. She sounded so irritated with this ectoplasmic voice box she had to speak through. And we kept reassuring her, yes, Florence, we can hear you. We can hear you, Florence. And at one point, there was one of the seances there in Hollywood. We had a lady, I think she was a bit deaf. And Leslie had a spirit guide named Mickey, and he was a little Cockney boy who would come through with a childish boy voice. And when this lady couldn't hear, he yelled, can you hear me, lady? And he yelled so loud that Leslie got quite nervous and said, oh, Mickey, don't shout. Because Mickey's voice was coming from the air 3 feet above Leslie's left shoulder. And, of course, Leslie was in a highly sensitive condition. When the ectoplasm was out of his body, it came out of his left ear, you see, and like a cloud. And that's where the spirits used it to speak. And, of course, if he shouted, Leslie would be very nervous and would tell, Mickey, don't shout, please. You'd hear Leslie speaking to his own spirit guides very often. He actually had a Dr. Marshall. Dr. Marshall would say to him, Leslie, get up and get more exercise and not so much of the whiskey. Leslie liked a wee drop of whiskey, John Brown did. John Brown was Queen Victoria's medium. You can hear John Brown on some of these Leslie Flint sites. There's a good one. If you Google Leslie Flint medium, you'll come up with a big screen full of these URLs, and one of them is FreeWebs, FreeWebs, FreeWebs.com. It'll say Afterlife, and it'll say Flint, HTML. And if you click on that, there they have over 120 wonderful voices of dead people describing to the two interviewers, George Woods and Betty Green, who went to London for 15 years, describing how they died, what it looks like over there, who they met, and what they do now. I mean, we have a marvelous, marvelous record of what lies beyond death. I have a lovely tape in my collection of Dame Ellen Terry, the famous Shakespearean actress who died in 1928. And she comes through and she says, "People in your world who listen to this recording of my voice might say to you, oh, that couldn't possibly be her, because she was very old when she died. I wish people in your world to know that I am no longer an old lady. I am considerably rejuvenated." Which is great news. Why don't the churches tell people this? Why doesn't organized religion get into the psychic act, and I shouldn't say act, but I mean get into it, and tell people the truth about these things, that life after death is automatic for everyone, regardless of your religious belief system or whatever your creed or color is. Everybody
actually
goes there.
In Mark Macy's book, they describe, which it's so corresponding, it's amazing, because yes, truth is truth. But the people, I guess, on the other side say that it's really one continuous eternity, and our time here on the physical plane to them is as if we were gone for a short period of time and that we were dreaming. That's
You're
how
absolutely
they describe
right.
it.
Yes, yes, that's quite true, Deborah. You're quite right. Yes, I think so. It does take away the fear of death. Ellen Terry says, "We come to you to comfort those who mourn, to strengthen those who are weak, and to give knowledge of the life to come, and to make everyone aware of their need for personal responsibility." In other words, what she's saying is, we create our own future heaven or our own future hell by the way we think and act and treat people here on the earth. If everybody on this planet could try to be a little more loving and to try to help people around them, I mean, you can't do the impossible, but, you know, do what you can for those around you and try to be a good listener and try to, you know, give kindness out. I think kindness is the cure for many, many ails, many ailments. Kindness is the cure.
And especially the way people are looking at the earth right now and the situations that we're having, it's generating a lot of fear. But really what we have is the opportunity to help take care of each other.
Yes, you're quite right again. And I think we should always try to be sanguine or hopeful. We should try to have a positive outlook. We don't want to go into the doom and gloom, because doom and gloom doesn't get you anywhere. It's negative. It paralyzes. I know some of the people that come to me are paralyzed with grief. They've had a child die tragically. I worked a lot with parents of murdered children. I worked with Doris Tate, the mother of the murdered movie star, Sharon Tate. Doris was very kind to me, and I tried to help her get over her long and deep-seated grief over the murder of her beautiful daughter and the baby that was unborn. You know, the Manson gang, a member of this lady from the Manson gang, stabbed Sharon Tate many times. And it was all very sad, back in the 60s. They wrote a book about it, I think. I forget the title of it, but it was a big tragedy. And Doris held groups at her home here in California, and I went to her home a number of times, and we sat for members of the Parents of Murdered Children and Compassionate Friends and Bereaved Parents USA. And I did, in fact, at one point, more than once, I gave the name of the killer of somebody's dead son. I was able to name the killer, and also, but they got the person under arrest, and that was correct. It was verified.
Wow. Now, we are 10 minutes to the hour. It went so fast.
I want to make sure.
I know. This has been just amazing. And, of course, I have a million more questions. But what I'd like to do is invite you back on the show, especially when I finish the second half of your wonderful book.
That would be a pleasure, Deborah. That would be a pleasure. I'd love to talk to you.
I think this is just so fascinating, and I wanted to ask you if there are people who do the type of physical mediumship that Leslie Flint did in terms of creating an ectoplasmic voice box, because what I've been learning about the instrumental technology,
ITC. Yes,
you know what I'm saying, the ITC and the EVP,
ITC, yes.
is that they're creating a similar type of thing so that the spirit people who are unable to, who don't have voice boxes, are able to manipulate electronics to create the means through which they can communicate in almost, you know, in like real-time conversation. But it sounds like that's what Leslie was able to do, you know, with the spirit voice box. But is that something that you also do, or are there other mediums?
I'm not a physical medium. I'm not a voice medium as such. I'm a clairvoyant, clairsentient, clairaudient, and that's how I work. Mine is mental mediumship, where you get telepathically, they transmit signals and code messages and little bits and pieces of information. From my point of view, I really do earn my living not knowing what I'm talking about, because I'm receiving information from total strangers and giving the information to total strangers in many cases.
Oh, I was finally told that I have a gift of mental mediumship, because I didn't know what to call it, and I get you. That's why I really, you know, of course, I so greatly admire you, and to even put myself in the same category, I mean, it's very humbling to speak with you, and I know...
Well, God bless you. God bless you, Deborah. God bless you. That's nice. It is an amazing thing. I have a website which has a lot of good information. It's www.brianhurst.com. B-R-I-A-N, no space, H-U-R-S-T. BrianHurst.com is my website. There you can get access to my three books I've written. Heaven Can Help is my autobiography. Some Go Haunting is a nearly 400-page mystery thriller, which is a page-turner and a really good read, so my people tell me. And Cinderella's Secret and Other Classical Poems, which is also available on Amazon. And also, they're all published on Kindle, the Amazon Kindle, so you can download each one of them for only $4 each, which is pretty good price. It's not expensive. So if you have a Kindle, download my books and read them, and you'll enjoy them, I promise you. They all got 5-star reviews on Amazon. Thank you, and God bless you.
And thank you so much for being on the show, and let's look forward to another time in the future.
Yes, certainly, Deborah. And by the way, you're a Libra, aren't you, Libra?
Your
birth sign is Libra. Libra is my rising sign, so we should get along very well.
Well, I see that we already do.
Yes, we do. We talk the same language, don't we? Yes.
Okay. Well, for those of you who are tuning in for the first time tonight, I hope that you will join us again on Soul Odyssey Radio. And for those of you who are returning, I'm so happy that we're live again this week and that we had such a wonderful guest. Please keep tuning in every Thursday, 6 o'clock Pacific Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Time. And this is your host, Deborah Herman, wishing you all many, many blessings and light. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.